श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गिरिवासी वासुदेव भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे। दिस इज योर इंटरचेंजेबल रिट्रीट कॉन्शियसनेस। If I know the devotees in retreat have left, I think some are leaving this morning. So I'm not sure whether I'll get the second part of this discussion. But we'll see. I'm scheduled, I think, for 10:30 after the sun. Just a few introductory points. In our Bhagavatam classes, we've been discussing Maharaj Prakshit, Kali, Maharaj Prakshit, keeping out Kali or giving Kali a place, discussing the principles of religiosity, the things that weaken or destroy those principles. And so, in that effort, we want to continue discussing about addressing Kali or identifying Kali, removing Kali, Kali having its place, because the place of Kali is not the environment of the devotees. You see, where there is intoxication, where there is manslaughter, where there's gambling, there's illicit affairs, and where there's gold, that Kali is dominant. You see, where there's no austerity, where there's less and less truthfulness, or there's falsehood, where there's void of cleanliness, etc., then Kali becomes prominent. When Kali comes in, so many things are associated with that. It's like right now, tomorrow is a special time for people in this area. Tomorrow is the inauguration of the hunting season. And so people will be out viciously taking the lives of four innocent animals. But we have signs around our properties so that we won't have hunters coming to the properties. But now, interesting thing, right in the same area, there's a non-curable disease. There's a flu now, there's some type of flu. It's non-curable. And only if they can rush you in critical care, they might save your life. And so they're warning hunters and warning people who are going into the bushes, into the woods, to be careful. See how these reactions are taking place. Due to Kali coming in, people doing improper things and considering, not realizing that there's consequence. So many different types of diseases we see here on the rise again. That's due to improper thinking, living, and so it gives inauspicious types of results. So this Pennsylvania area is designated, it's like an alarm about this type of flu. It comes somehow, I think, from the droppings of rats and droppings of deer. And so some of you may be scouting around the woods a little bit. Be careful, or be sure that you wash your hands and things sufficiently when you come back inside. Or keep your shoes in a special place where they're not so likely to. Because we don't walk into the houses anyway. So many things devotees do give natural protection in many ways because they're natural things. So I was having some discussions with some devotees the last few days, the same kind of spirit, looking at what is happening in devotional communities, what is happening in the secular world, what is happening with world civilization, and how devotees can capitalize on the moment to enhance our spiritual life. And my discussion was supposed to be something on leadership. There's a few small things I want to read out of this book that coincides with Bhagavatam and some of the discussions and even our work here. I was looking closely at the, as many of you I'm sure have and still are, look at the lives of the Goswamis. We see how they were Lokanamas, Vikaranas, Shadulane. They were very active, very kind, everyone. Fixed in the sense that they were preaching to the royal class, they were preaching to the ruffians. They were living very simply. At the same time, they were arranging big buildings and big temples, and their lives were very diversified. Look at the seventh Goswami Bhaktivinoda, we see that, and even in some cases even more. Even some of his writings, particularly during this time, there was like 13 or more different Sahajiya groups. And even some of his writings are particularly designed, written in the spirit of the Sahajiya groups to make them devotees. He went even as far as changing his own name when he wrote these particular literatures. He changed his own name to be able to be more effective in dealing with the Sahajiya group, giving the name that they were associated with, and used their language. And of course, you see his amazing ability to be a strong family householder, to be a strong judge, to be a strong caretaker of Jagannath, and so much literature and so much ability to help so many people in so many ways. So I wrote this particular literature and some other things that I'm writing. It's sort of in that spirit. When Srila Prabhupada was on the planet, my major service was sort of like spiritual espionage. And that somehow by Prabhupada's mercy, I had some ability to constantly get in and see important people. Whether it was leader of the Mormon society, or whether it was the bishop of this, or the president of this corporation, or the university director, or the top Sanskritists in this university or in the world, etc. So, a disciple always wants to serve Guru and to please Guru, and the more we can serve without speculations, then of course the more chance there is to serve Guru as Guru wants. So, as some of you have seen some videos and some of you see in these kind of review, many things we do is in that spirit. This book is in that sort of mood. It's spiritual espionage. So far it's doing quite well. It's just recently been published in Russian. It'll be printed in Japan and Japanese soon. I've personally given to about six heads of states of different countries. You saw in the Islam review some time ago. It was launched in the Parliament of Sierra Leone, and the Chief Justice requested that it be used as a leadership handbook for the government. They should take it more serious because they're about to go into a war right now. We are arranging in South Africa. Nelson Mandela is stepping down soon. And nobody knows what's going to happen in the country because he's a very, very strong person, and no one knows what's going to happen after he steps down, what may take place. And the devotees are arranging a leadership conference. We can address some of these issues. I personally give it to Nelson Mandela, to Luther Lazy, and some of the other leaders of the country. They're actually literally studying it. Second edition is coming out in about a month or so. We'll be working on it. We're having it available. And that'll have a lot of reviews from some professors and even from one of the top heart surgeons in the world. And so interesting things have been developing in some of these lines. What does it have to do with the discussion of Kali? It has a lot to do because we see that Kali is particularly dominant when leaders become fallen, or when leaders are not supporting the principles of religiosity, and when they themselves do not understand what is necessary for what this human life is about, or when they themselves are not being chased to the Siddhanta. Sometimes we're discussing how the fall of civilization is actually the fall of the medical class. So when the priestly class is not doing their part, yesterday we were discussing about, you know, the Hari Bhakti Vilas. Now, Hari Bhakti Vilas says that the counselor to the leader is responsible for the sins of the leader. The husband is responsible for the sins of his wife, and that the spiritual master is responsible for the sins of the disciple. Now, those are certain type of leaders, or affecting other leaders, but everybody is a leader in as much as that every adult, their activities is influencing the children. And so it has an effect on what the future will be. And so we are highly accountable, responsible. And so what leaders do, it has an effect on the environment. Like this morning, I purposely was dancing with the girls because we don't want our girls feeling that the guru is only concerned about the boys, only concerned about the adults. But we don't want to have an environment where everyone doesn't feel that it's a family, everyone doesn't feel that it's Krishna consciousness for them. We train our young ladies, our young girls in such a way, or we train our children in such a way that we just tolerate them, then they will feel that they are just tolerated. Krishna consciousness is a toleration arrangement for them. I hope in Sundays, that as we're having the regular classes, that we're able to gradually have Sunday school for the children. So that Sunday becomes especially a time for them when they are not just coming along with their parents, but that they have something that they can do that's exciting, inspiring for them, and it's at the same time educational. We send messages to them very strong by how we interact. So in that case, everyone is a leader. We all have so many responsibilities. Now, the other day too, I was mentioning that Kali is attracted with their environment that are either sinful or that elicit or beckon sin. And Krishna, his devotees, and empowered entities, they're attracted when there is high-level bhakti. As we know, there's a time when the demigods, devas, used to come frequently. Yajnas would be performed. People were engaged in such level devotion that they would come and go. And we understand, like in the case of Bhakti Vinod, says that he was having invisible personalities he was always communicating with. In other words, his content, his environment was so surcharged that just great empowered entities would just very frequently come and be a part of that environment. And some of us have seen some cases where Srila Prabhupada has been in the room, nobody was there, but he would literally be making gestures and talking. Because where there is very powerful personalities, then powerful entities are attracted, powerful things happen, the Krishna potency, the Krishna magic is ongoing. So in that spirit, I was mentioning a very serious discussion with some of the devotees that we should be very active in general in trying to keep Gitanagari simple, but constantly try to arrange on development and purity, to the point that anyone who comes into the environment would experience the Krishna magic. It was nice yesterday when Ramon Padmaraj was mentioning how that he was happy about being here, and all his help was bad, he hadn't danced like that in a long time, and how Gitanagari is very inspiring. Of course, his health is kind of weakened. He feels rejuvenated when coming. And we want many devotees, it doesn't matter leaders, but anybody, when they come, to feel a sense of rejuvenation. I was mentioning also how I'm moving around, especially a lot lately. This last visit, I went to Hawaiian Islands, North Carolina projects, and LA, and 5-6 engagements a day. And coming here is like coming home for a sense of rejuvenation, gratification, and sort of go back out and move about again. Like I'm leaving in a few days, and I'm not sure what my schedule will be. I'd probably go to Africa. Looks like I haven't been to West Africa for the whole year. And I just heard a few days ago that Sethi Maharaj will be coming. I think in the end of December. December. So we want to have more and more environment so that these great sadhus come. This is the nature of Tirtha. Tirtha is such that great personalities come, they give their blessings, great people come to get those blessings. And so the potency is explosive in that sense. So when these generals come, we want to somehow to hear from them very attentively, to receive their blessings, and by being attentive and concerned, and by using what they give, then it gives them also more strength to give and to share more. I also want to mention, if you desire, I will not be here when Sethi Maharaj comes. I'll be in either West Africa or South Africa. But I would love if you would like, the Institute House is totally empty. You can use that if you like. It's a large room for darshan and things, so you can consider that. So as we build up the atmosphere, then we can have Sattva Yuga within Kali Yuga. We can have such potency that devotees, love, devotion, strong satana, can not only be so much reinforcing for them individually, but it can actually like bring in the atmosphere of another age. Where in the Sattva-yuga practically everyone was serving Krishna. And in Sattva-yuga we see that Kali was almost absent as such. So I was sharing with the devotees some ways how to start working on that immediately. And so one of the things I mentioned, asked them to consider, some of them to write it down so they could be reminded themselves. First, it was discussing how, and this is some things that we're going to look at in a minute in the book, just very briefly, cursory. First thing I was mentioning is that each devotee should try to develop the consciousness of treating each and other devotees in the mood that one's success or failure of one's devotional life is dependent upon how he or she relates to each devotee. Now if you just think about that, first that is an integral part of our Siddhanta. That a devotee is not having enemies and friends, is not holding grudges. The devotee is trying to see Krishna everywhere and everything, and is becoming Krishna, or is Krishna consciousness. So imagine the potency. If in every interaction, each person is in the mood that the success, or perhaps even the failure, of my own devotional life is based on how I treat the person. It doesn't matter whether it's a junior, whether it's a senior, whether it's a child, whether it's a husband or wife. Then the power, we're talking about creating, within the Kali Yuga, creating a potency of consciousness and a potency of an environment, where even the demigods come again, and where it becomes such a powerful tirtha that it becomes amplified, has such an amplifying effect. Because, you know, it doesn't take insight to see that civilization is already crumbling. And as civilization crumbles, then more and more Kali becomes dominant, and the more chance there is for the higher spirituality if we can grab the moment. Often Prabhupada would mention how the Goblin Kami see this problem, that problem, for devotees, greater chance to preach. Greater chance now to put into action what we've been always reading. Even as sometimes institutional things begin to fall apart, so greater chance now to stop hiding behind certain situations, certain structures, and to become genuinely more Krishna conscious. There are many things also happening in our own institution, on a global scale, that's inauspicious. So, but in other sense, it's most auspicious because it's giving individuals a chance. How much are you really Krishna conscious? How much are you really accepting the principles, following the principles, living the principles, and ready to carry the rest of your life with these principles? So this is heavy, keeping Kali out. Kali cannot enter into an environment where everyone is treated in a devotional consciousness and related in that mood that the success and failure of their devotional career based on those interactions, the potency of them. Second, we were emphasizing that when there is conflict, that the position of a Vaishnava, the Vaishnava is always dasu dasu anudasu. Param dukha kripambodhi is feeling the misery of others, the happiness of others, it's trying to see how to be servant, recalling to be faithful to each other. And so if we mean that, it means that your existence is so important to me, that you are my master, and I'm concerned about the well-being of your existence. And that is my conscience. That is what we say for Buddha. So therefore, if there's a problem, then it is something that the servant is concerned about because the Prabhu for that servant is feeling some problem. Having some problem, you are Prabhu. I'm your servant, and I'm concerned. So two, we're recommending that when there is any problem, that the individual should see him or herself first, that the problem is their fault. Imagine the potency. Imagine the ability to eradicate conflict if one starts from that position and then starts working, trying to work through whatever the issue is. There's a problem. My Prabhu, some Prabhu is having a problem. I'm to be the servant of the servant. So therefore, I first start looking at myself. What did I do? What did I not do? What did I do? What sent the wrong message, etc., etc. What could I have done? What can we do? Very hard for Kali to have a footing such an environment, because sexual consciousness is anti-material. It has nothing to do with the duality of the material world. If there's a problem, there's always problems. If there's a problem in your marital life, there's a problem in this situation, that situation, and you're looking at it first, because you are my beloved, because you are my bubble, the problem is there, the problem, you're feeling that there's a problem, and therefore it's a problem for me in the sense that first I'm looking to see what could I have done differently, how could I have said differently, how can I approach you differently, what can be done, etc. And so, conflicts can be resolved in a very healthy way. Not only the colleague can I come in, but the problem will simply lead into greater sweetness in the association. Third, we were mentioning that looking at what is happening with ourselves in terms of the age that we are, in terms of the world, in terms of life itself, that one day we got to check out of this place. And that if we serve with each other in such a spirit, that these are the people that I am sharing my life with, and these are the people that I may be leaving my life with, meaning leaving this body. Then again, how important, how sweet, how serious, how meaningful all the relationships, all the associations can be, because then I'm thinking, well, this is my life now. And I'm a devotee. And these devotees, who are my family? Or this is my immediate family. My devotees I'm associating with, this project or this situation. And so since this is my family, what I have is what I have. So if you have 7 children, you have 3 children, or we have this community, that community, so this is what we have. And this is what our devotional life is so much based on, how we're using what we have, what Krishna has arranged. Now, excellent, this is our field of activity. Considering these are maybe the people that may also be leaving this world with. And we understand, we leave this world, the context we're in is going to determine what our next situation is. And the fourth thing, somebody, anyone remembers who was in the prior discussion? Sure.
Was that person had a very gift of knowledge
that
we have love with? She
read about all the serious point. Sometimes there's a problem, we have love, love, love. What does that mean? What is it? Some sentimental thing? What is that? At least we have some little idea, because we all have some affection for someone or somebody in our life we have a lot of affection for. Think of the person we have the greatest affection for, but at least we can gradually begin to develop that kind of love for everyone. We don't understand pure love until we are pure beings. But we can move more and more towards selflessness, and we have some glimpses of some strong affection. So we all have some strong affection. For someone. We don't have strong affection for anyone, we're really in trouble. We have some affection for something, or maybe just ourselves. But then at least extend that to everyone. Some of us love our physical self so much, we love our real self, and we have love for others naturally. But at least we can realize, oh, because we have some identification with that. We know the feeling, we know what we do, somebody we really care about. We know how we want to protect, how we want to be there for them. So somehow we can extend that gradually so that we're having that kind of love. Imagine how much one him herself will feel so satisfied, because so much of that will come back to you. By being loving, or by acting lovingly, you become loving yourself. And then so much of the Kali Yuga is no longer part of your consciousness, part of your life space. Because we're creating the mentality of Sattva Yuga. Sattva Yuga is the highest expression in the material culture. So we still have to deal with material energy to a certain extent. But to be Krishna-centered. So now what I did is put together some book that would do 3 distinct things. One, anyone, karmi, atheist, materialist, who would read this, take it serious, would end up following the 4 rules and regulations. Each chapter is designed so that after one finishes, that they will see the necessity of following the 4 pillars of the 4 rules and regulations that establishes one on a human platform. Baba says one is an animal of goodness, then becomes a human platform. Yeah? So most people out there, they are not taking to the principles of human spiritual life. And so their lifestyle is more sort of like animalistic in that sense. Second is to influence aspects of foreign policy. This book, as I said, has been because several even the president of America has this, because some presidents from the third world countries especially are using it very seriously in terms of study guide. There's some leadership trainers, Kavichandra Swami's sister's one in hand, who does leadership training for some top Fortune 500 companies. And she uses this because there is a mood now about principle centeredness. There's a mood now about ethics. There's even a mood about spirituality in the workplace. But in most cases, top management is interested because they want to relieve people from stress. They want to save money. They realize that you save millions, on a larger scale, billions of dollars by people being less stressed out, by people having better diet, by people not retiring early, by less conflicts on the workplace, etc. And so many people are not even interested in spirituality, but they see that it works, and so they want to have people come in and discuss things because they realize that they need help in some areas. So I want to just let us turn to chapter 1. We're not going to read the book, but just go to the back page. See, after each chapter, there is like there's highlights. So that even the person is dull, and they didn't, because see, I started noticing by meeting some of these presidents, some of them are very dull. Some of our senators are very dull. Now, dull in that they're sharp about things that's distinctly some sense gratification for them. See, many, many leaders of countries are given the Bhagavatam sets to come and visit them later, try to cultivate and realize that they're not reading it so seriously. Because we are somewhat fortunate that we have somehow the ability and desire to be able to read transcendental subject matters. But most people, they're simply concerned with how is something going to make some connection for my sense gratification. We'll turn to page 42. I was discussing how for several years I had ongoing TV program in Nigeria and off and on in Ghana. So Ghana is only one TV station in the whole country. So the president of the country and many other important people watch me on TV. So one day when I met the president and I spoke with him in length, two of his ministers asked Minister of Defense, I think Minister of Agriculture or Treasury in the Treasury Department, the Minister of Treasury, asked if I would actually consult him to the country. So I started thinking then more and more how to put some things forward that would address their issues but would help them to improve on their own life and would have an effect on the project or the citizens that they're responsible for. And seeing how they're more concerned with how to deal with crime, how to have better roads, better water, how to, develop a rapid growth, industrialize, and some other, basic essential problems, how to take a look at this, because this is the things that we can communicate on, but to get Krishna consciousness through behind them. And so therefore, we looked at, okay, they're concerned with crime, they're concerned with, resource depletion, they're concerned with intoxication, they're concerned also with, divorces in some of these places, marital problems. They're concerned with conflict resolution, with time management, with stress management. So all of those things, devotees have the answers for. We have the answers to the ecology concerns. We have the answers to the health concerns. We have the answers to development. We have whatever's there if we use it. And especially our Goswamis and our seven Goswami Bhakti people know we're expert in doing such. So here we put highlights so that somehow even if after reading the chapter, it didn't register because of too much meat and intoxications. People got too much meat on their brain, too much intoxication, they actually can't hear very well. Just a couple of days ago when I gave a lecture, to a group of the business people in Washington, it was a big yearly conference. And I warned the devotees, I said, now, I want to speak before they drink. Because once people start drinking, the whole atmosphere changes. Because that invites Kali in. And once they start eating all the abominable things. And it invites Kali in. And so, you know, there were, you know, high class so-called, I mean, not high class, there were business people who thought they were on the move. They're having a program in, you know, plush place in a ballroom. But somehow, they drunk before. You know. Some, now they have cocktails before, they have dinner and they have cocktails, but it's kind of hard to figure out sometimes. So they had some drinking before, and some people even doing a little eating even before this thing started or while it was going on. And so I spoke, you know, brief, I gave the invocation, gave the prayer, and spoke a little something. But basically, it wasn't much communication because people were so already, Kali had already come in. So when Kali becomes dominant like that, then it becomes hard to try to get Krishna through. But what is one of the duties of devotees? How to keep Kali out. Definitely one of the duties of senior devotees is how to keep the Maya out. So, after each chapter, there are highlights that just summarizes. And then there are mindsets. Or then it's like things that the leader is to do. to some things to work on, some actual examples and some actual techniques, so that somehow, gradually, by the time they finish it, they've begun now to follow the principles and they change their consciousness. So of course we start off this first chapter with how important it is for a leader to see himself, herself, as the caretaker, how important it is to have loving concerns, sentiments, etc. So I just wanted to read a few things from the mindset from that, since we're talking a little bit about technologies, implementing, raising individual consciousness, affecting collective consciousness, and creating a very potent atmosphere. Now, before that, maybe I should go to this first. Let's backtrack this once. Go to page, let me see, page 11. Now, page 11, we list 10 different empowerment technologies, which after every chapter is read, then the individual is to reflect on these 10 and to see which one he or she would feel more comfortable in applying for that particular chapter, along with specific things after each chapter. Now, you can see this kind of espionage, what's happening here. So the first technique is what if, what for, so what. In other words, it's like, so for a person to look in their life and to look at what their goals are. So somebody wants to be famous. Somebody wants to be rich. Somebody wants to be powerful. Okay, so you get that. And you acquire this and you acquire that. So what? It's like telling him to look at your life. So you want to be the president of the country. You want to be this. You want to be wealthy. You want to be powerful. Okay, so you acquire that. So what? For them to look at, so many of their goals, even if they acquire it, what's the big deal? You take a look, okay, if you acquire that, if you become that, if you do that, then now, what's next, or so what? But the idea of just trying to get them to look closer at a sense of meaning. Second point, you're not this body. And of course, that's most basic. It's getting the individual to reflect on that you have a job, you have a house, you have a profession, you have a body, you have a mind, but you're not that. And so whatever thing is happening to us is not really ultimately happening to us, but it's the body. The other point is the other person's point of view. In considering that when there is some problem, some discussion, some argument, somebody else has a reason for what they are thinking, what they are doing, and what they are saying. And many times, and Rampa Maharaj mentioned yesterday when Vedvati asked a question, that many times no resolution is developed because each individual is only considering his idea, his discretion, his consideration, his perception, etc. So sometimes it's healthy not only that we consider somebody else has value to exist and value to think about what they are thinking, but that we put ourselves in their situation, or we can even take up their argument temporarily. And here we're asking them that they write something in relationship to the adversary's points. And then often get a better idea of why somebody's thinking something, or you take their position, or you take their argument, or you write something in the spirit that you are that adversary, and therefore you get so much more realization why somebody else is doing something, thinking something, etc. seeing God everywhere. This is just a matter of Bhagavad Gita 15:15, how Krishna is in everyone's heart. And he is watching everything. And I'm sorry, that the soul is part and parcel of Krishna. And therefore, we can have an appreciation how Krishna is in everyone, in that sense. Everything has a purpose. This is just karma. Accountability, that is realizing that Krishna is in everyone's heart, watching everyone. And so everything that each person is doing is being noticed, and we're going to be held responsible. Now, a call for love. This is that any interactions that we have is either a sharing of love or a request for love. It doesn't matter what it is. Enviousness, take negative things. Enviousness, fear, lust, greed, avariciousness, that's just a symptom. But the real issue is that there is an area where someone is feeling that love is missing. We're envious of somebody's envious of someone, they're feeling that person is getting attention, that person is getting the love that should be coming to them. Somebody's jealous, then they're fearful that somehow what should be for them is not being made available, is not coming. Someone is frightened, they're afraid, they want love, they want protection, they're afraid that they're not going to get that, or they're not getting it. And so any problem, we can be able to still remain loving and not have to play down or get into some incoherence. Because even when there is a problem, we can see it from a perspective or a view of looking at it from a loving consideration, loving variables. And therefore, it becomes easier then to try to see how to help, whether just categorizing or being condescending, or whether just dealing with the symptom. Because we know that our ultimate nature is that we are loving entities. And we're ultimately connected with the divine loving couple. And so the more that we are able to access that, then the more we are more qualified to be about what we are eternally. Last three, love in action. It's the idea of the individual really seeing themselves as like an agent that can move around and infect people with love and devotion. And then near death and the second chance, 9 and 10, we're asking the leaders or people to consider that you finally have some serious disease, deathly disease, and you're going to die in some short months. Now, what things in your life will be very important? Some things will be very important now, and other things will have very little value. So those things that will be most important, those are the things that one should give more attention to and involve themselves much more conscientiously. Because many things that we do, it doesn't make such a serious difference in our real situation. Or the second chance is that you've already died, and now you're looking back. You're looking at your life. And one starts thinking, oh, I wish I would have done this, wish I would have did this. You've already died, and somehow you're looking back at the situation and having many different realizations based on that. So as we put our mind in that kind of mood, and we think what kind of things we would have wanted to do if we now left the body, and those things we should give serious attention to in such a way. All of this is mainly helping the person to focus on not being the body, taking a greater look at what this life is about, and being able to access some divine consciousness, whether they're conscious or unconscious of that. Okay, now we'll go to some of the highlights of that particular first chapter. So we'll turn to page 25. These highlights, we'll skip over that to shorten our presentation. Okay, now the page 27 is the techniques. The page 25 just summarizes basic core of the essence of that particular chapter. 25 now gives some things to do to be able to implement the philosophy in one's consciousness and to push Kali out to a certain extent. So first we mentioned about referring to the 10 things that's in the front of the book. So each chapter, one will be looking at those and trying to see which of those to apply. Two, This talks about the idea of lust and love. How one is going to be crazy. We are either going to be crazy and controlled by lust, or we're going to be motivated, stimulated, and influenced by love. And each individual has the ability to make a choice at any given time. Number three, Joseph Rupa Goswami emphasizes about the need for straightforwardness. And as we also discussed in Ramaphosa Maharaj's class, the idea of speaking truth palatably. So although the love may be painful when it is experienced in the form of truthfulness and knowledge, remind yourself that you will not deviate from acting with integrity, even if you are misunderstood. See, sometimes there's so much desire to please people's minds, please their personality. Sometimes we are more interested in just repressing the situation than resolving it. Or basic material life is a cosmetic arrangement. But the difficulty in that is when we do things cosmetically, we get just that. We get temporary results. We get something that is functional only for the moment, but doesn't have a sense of longevity. We get something that just satisfies the senses of the mind, but doesn't satisfy the soul. You can do many things that help people to feel peaceful, to satisfy the mind. But if you really care about someone, you want to go beyond that. Your child will be very satisfied. They don't have to clean. They don't have to even probably bathe. Well, not our children. But they don't have to go to school. But although that may satisfy their mind temporarily, but it doesn't do anything in terms of the real well-being of that particular person. So obviously, in leadership, people do favoritism and nepotism, or so much they're concerned about one scratches one's back, another person scratches their back, they agree to cover up a lie, or they agree to engage in a lie, or they agree to collectively cheat, etc. And so much contamination takes place like that. When there is invested interest, or there are things in the closet, etc. Next, number four. Imagine scenarios of yourself succumbing to lust, which you may recall is misdirected love. It's like when it happens to a devotee that when we lose attention, then we fall prey, of course, to the lust. And sometimes we can mentally follow a situation through. The mind is saying do this, the senses are saying this, we can follow it through. Okay, the senses are saying, so now, you know, take some alcohol, take some intoxications, do this thing, you'll feel a little bit of relief. And then you imagine yourself going through that and you realize, I'm not going to do that. So if I take drugs, or if I go back and see that old boyfriend, see that old girlfriend, look at the results of what that will actually be. Because see, often the mind is presenting something, tempting, that's nature of Maya, is tempting and presenting something with flamboyance that is very detrimental. So sometimes we have to call Maya's bluff. Okay, Maya, give me the best of what you can offer. All right, you want me to lead devotional service? All right. What are you going to offer? So mind says, well, you can become a movie star. So I'm interested in that. Mind says, well, you become a big scholar. Go back to school for 8 years. And study, and then you become a big scholar. You say, I don't know. I'll be an old person before the dead time. I'll be ready to retire anyway by the time I finish. Or the mind says, well, why don't you just leave this place and go that place? And you think, yeah, okay, now what would that be like? What would be the experiences? See, the mind is so funny. Maya presents often the illusion or the glamour without letting us realize the consequences that are associated with that. Now, because in many cases, we've already experienced much of the Maya, so Maya will like haunt us and present the sensation or something pleasant without reminding us all the other stuff that was associated with it. You realize, oh, when I was with that person, I wasn't so happy. Most of the time, I was fine. I want to go back to them. Or, you know, so many illusions is there. But sometimes we can call minds, well, okay, what do you have? So we can walk through these situations. No, I don't want that, I don't want that, I don't want that. All right, I really want to be a devotee. Just have to get my niche, go on, do the necessary. Otherwise, we keep being enticed, and we will be thinking that there's something really to be had by some illusory stuff, and before we know it, we'll go back into the illusion, and there'll be conflict, there'll be a problem. And we know that once you're captured like that, it becomes hard to kind of pull yourself up. So sometimes, you just imagine, okay, if I do that, then what will happen? It's like even when I saw the devotees, you can remember, I mean, I was in Alatra recently, several of the old God brothers came to see me and God sisters. They were mentioning how nice, especially some of them married now. I'm not attacking the health of ashram. But they were saying, how much I was so happy when I was a simple brahmachari. How much I was so happy when I was just doing swinging. But, yes, there was perhaps some simplicity and some happiness, but there were also problems when in that activity. And so sometimes you're thinking, maybe I shouldn't marry. Or maybe I should go back to Arizona, go back to New York, where I used to be happy when I was a brahmachari. But they don't realize that New York is not the same New York anymore. Secondly or spiritually, the environment is different. But they're kind of living off the past and thinking, if I go back to this place, then I'll have the experience and the conscience when I was a brahmachari in that place, and I'll be happy. But it's different. Because first, when they were brahmachari, there were some problems, but at the same time, the movement is different, the world is different, and they're also different. So some people are constantly living in the past. Some people were like that. Even in general, some people live in the past. How nice the movement was in the 70s and the 80s. How wonderful it was. Yes, it was wonderful, but there was many problems. This in the past, yes, there was a sweetness there, and there was also a problem. And there will be sweetness and difficulties in the present, and the future will also be a sweetness and also difficulties. Because every situation has its own type of difficulties, and also has its benefits. But each individual has to be clear in their mind how they want to position themselves to be able to move on through the process of bhakti. And in some cases, one may feel a little more expert or a little more satisfied in positioning this way or that way. But the idea is that one is to keep intense consciousness and move on. But if we are constantly living in the past, we'll find ourselves very, very demoralized because we'll be constantly like running for the rainbow. And it's what happens. It's like a lady gets to be 60 years old and she's looking in the mirror and she's thinking how nice it was when she was 25 years old. And you got some of her clothes and her dresses that she's the one when she was 25. Now she's four times that size, and she can't wear those things, and she can't dance like she used to, and so many things. But she's just living in the past. Well, she will always be miserable, because life means change. And it means how somehow to adjust and to adapt based on such. So many old men in the rocking chairs, and just thinking about what they used to do. They still have so many desires, and they're frustrated because they can't act upon those desires. Because they realize, yes, material energy means duality. And they know perfect happiness in the material world. And as we're able to realize that, then we're somehow able to constantly use the moment to bring in less and less kali and more sense of divinity. One or two other short ones. Five. As an exercise in loving yourself as a soul, speak to your soul each day. Honor it and thank it because it is a part of God. Remember that you do not love yourself. If you do not love yourself with proper self-esteem, you cannot love others deeply. Meaning that people who don't have a sense of, spunk about themselves, how are they going to have it, with others? There's some people who have such a defeatist mood just within their own consciousness. They have such a, lack of austerity, lack of cleanliness, lack of the principles of religiosity within their own life. And so therefore, how are they going to be able to share or to make a difference in the environment? So we know that the mind, the senses, the body is all being used by the soul. So we can remind ourselves who we really are. And then another short point. Six, you're a warrior. Visualize yourself attacking negative energy with your weapon of knowledge. So devotees have weapons of devotion, of knowledge, a shield of compassion, and your armor of love. This is especially useful when you are negotiating with those in a different mindset, when you are being attacked by opponents, or when you feel that your efforts are misunderstood or inappropriate. See, so much, interaction goes on grossly and so much subtly.
And even when people are attacking you, gross or subtle, look, a lot of that these days, there's a lot of people intruding other people's mind space. Except a lot of people's sickness has to do with a lot of influences, etc. So, as individuals become more stressed out, more fearful, or disappointed with their life, they fall prey to sickness easier, they fall prey to depression, and they fall prey to other people's dumping their garbage on them. Or they fall prey to other people's lower energies being an individual getting affected by it. Even the, you know, the behaviorists and the scientists and the medicine, they understand the power of the mind. There's this thing called psychoneuroimmunology, which is just all about how mind influences body. So many sicknesses have a distinct, you know, mind counterpart, or psychosomatic diseases. And every chronic disease is associated with a certain type of mindset. There's a certain kind of mindset that is more prone to produce cancer. When somebody has some of the most traumatic things in their life, they have a divorce, they lose a sibling, people become so much more prone for such things because it goes along with mind. And people who do not love deeply, do not live as long, are not as healthy, and surely don't enjoy a sense of well-being, a sense of life. Love is not just some sentiment, but for Vaishnava even more. It's our food. It's our real nourishment. Keep taking inventory, number seven. Keep taking inventory of your thoughts, words, and actions. You see if you love your neighbor as yourself, or even more than yourself. Be honest. But sometimes we need to look a little closer at what stuff is going through our minds. Because it's what is going through the mind, there it becomes spoken, and it becomes action. So as we are taking notice of what's going through the mind is changing, and we start speaking and acting differently. To the extent that your thoughts are misaligned, focus on bringing them into accord with the power of love. Since Papa is mentioning how, in one voice, he's asking about offering obeisances to others, why should you do that if you don't feel it? You know, if you don't really feel to be somebody's servant, you don't really feel the posture of yourself, why do it? I would explain that by doing this, then we gradually develop, we become. So if we take inventory to see some areas we distinctly see is embarrassing, is unhealthy for the devotion, then we put more attention into doing the positive thing and then it balance. Like somebody who you don't get along with, then be even more eager to serve that person. Even more eager to offer that person something. Do something nice to that individual. Because then it changes the situation. Always, number eight, always see yourself as a caretaker of God's property. Treating everything in your care with greater respect than you would if it were your own. We had the marriages where we speak on these points. How when husband and wife make their contract, that they should not just be thinking, now this is my wife, this is my husband, and we're discussing the samskaras with the children. We think that this is my kid, then we will not give the high enough care that's necessary. We should think that this is not just my wife, my husband, and my children, but this is the gift that's been given by Krishna. That Krishna has sent this soul that's in the female's body for me to take care of. Krishna has sent this soul in a male's body for me to serve, relate, and to take care of. Then we give even greater care than if it was our own. If something is our own, then if we don't feel like dealing with it, we just feel it's not our own, so we can just put it on hold. Or if we want to abuse it, after all, it's ours, so we can abuse it. Whose right is it to complain? If we want to deny it, we deny it. Because after all, it's ours. So we want to go beyond something that is ours. Because we realize that proprietorship is really part of disease, being material energy. And we see ourselves proprietors, and we have to keep coming again and again, taking material bodies. So here we're just instructing the leaders that, in general, they say that this is for three purposes. One was to influence some policies with some leaders and whatnot, and to help devotees, because they begin to realize that the rokas, devotees need these things as much or more than the secular community. Because we have so much high knowledge and so little ability to apply it. Look at how much we're frustrated, how much we're in anxiety, how much our senses are bothered, it means we're not applying it. Look at how much our lives are in disarray, it means we're not applying it.
because it's there. Some time ago, I was doing a program at an institute, and I was telling the devotees, when we are Maya, it's a distinct sign that we are lazy or void of compassion. Because laziness, everything is in Prabhupada's books that can resolve any problem, any situation, it's all there. And when we are not being sufficiently compassionate, we're minimizing how rare it is for someone to be able to take to the Sanatana Dharma, and how rare it is for a great soul like Prabhupada to be able to make this available on a world scale. And so if we somehow have been touched with a chance to participate, and if we don't use it, then we're being so void of compassion, because many people could get the chance and get help by individuals who do have it being able to use it. The last few here. So always see yourself as caretaker. Read still number 8. If we see him as caretaker, then we're thinking, so Krishna has sent this to me. Krishna has taken this away. Krishna has arranged this. Now let me honor Krishna by using it as Krishna would be satisfied. 9. In ancient times, the leader was considered both a representative of God and an administrator whose beneficial actions increased people's love. See yourself as such a leader. In other words, leader's duty, you see, was to be a medium. Bhagavatam explains very clearly that one should not be a mother, one should not be a parent, one should not be a teacher, one should not be a guru, unless they are going to be involved in the liberation of those who are their caretakers. That means being a medium and communicating the message and living the message and seeing that it is carried through. And then 10, see yourself as a vehicle for contagious love that spreads to others wherever you go. Everyone around you then becomes a carrier. Radiate that same selfless love to love still to others. This says Maya is contagious. Maya is also contagious. And when there are so many people who embrace Kali, then we have Kali Yuga, where Kali becomes the supreme. And when so many people are not inviting Kali, then we see Kali has just some small little places somewhere. But as we move on, civilization's crumbling, we see Kali becoming more dominant. But as Vaishnavas, it is our duty not to invite the Kali. It's our duty to keep the Kali out. And we can never keep Kali out just by any kind of physical arrangements only. That's Kali's game. Kali is best in the physical in physical arena. But we bring in the bhakti, and more and more of the culture of bhakti, it has so much to do with the mind and with the associations. That is the culture. That is how the culture is expressed. Culture is never something that an individual only does. The cultural experience is that people are doing individually and sharing collectively, and that determines what the culture is. So this was the topic I was to address for the retreat. Let's try to address it along with what we discussed in the Bhagavatam class, and also to address it with perhaps some issues we need to look at in ourselves in terms of creating more and more potency in the environment, working on our own individual lives. It's an inner experience that then is affected externally. All the external things are there, but they're secondary. Spiritual life is really an inner experience. It's inner stagnation that causes, of course, the obfuscation, the lack of grabbing Krishna's mercy, experiencing Krishna's divine presence. And it's the releasing of those shackles, inner shackles, based on respecting our consciousness, that allows us then to be the natural, blissful beings that we are. And so we look at our lives and see, are we actually happy with our lives? Are we actually excited about what we are becoming? Are we actually excited about what we're offering to our spiritual masters? Are we excited about what we're sharing with each other? And if we're not, only we can do something about it. Each individual can do something about it. No one can eat for us. Nobody can sleep for us. Nobody can chant for us. Nobody can die for us. We'll have to do those things ourselves. And nobody can make you happy unless you are ready to experience within yourself. Somebody can buy things for you, give you things, say all kind of things to you, do all kind of stuff. But unless you are making some adjustments in your own mental space, it won't mean nothing. You just feel like they're insulting you. Like you do something very nice, but they're insulting you, they're trying to get rid of you.
Somebody buys you some nice clothes, you say, oh, they insulted you. They're saying that you're sorry that your dirty is as dirty as ruin. I mean, the mind, you know, is where it codifies and processes. Somebody can say, oh, you chant it so nicely, and you just say, oh, they're just making fun of it. They don't mean this chant, they're just making fun about how you chant. But, so, it comes down to consciousness. And I'm kind of on a roll on this because, you know, I just see, I mean, I'm traveling a lot, and I see, here's what other places, I see that devotees are cheating themselves. Don't allow yourself to suffer, because it's not a suffering process. Do something. You know, study the scriptures closely and then apply it. Should be happy about what is happening, because our sadness should only be that other people are not coming to Krishna consciousness, not experiencing. Or our sadness should be that we want to move faster about what we're having, and we're happy about only one more of it. But other things, there's some sadness, and it's going to work something out. You got to see, what is it that we're not sufficiently doing? So we'll stop there. I just took one chapter. This was just the first introductory chapter, addressing some points, basic points. As you can see, it's espionage. It's written sort of simply, but at the same time, if it's followed and someone reads and concludes with following the principles, or devotees follow it, then they will also access what our Goswamis have given us with more effectiveness. So Prabhupada said one of the biggest problems with devotees is they don't believe Krishna is God. So Prabhupada said that most of these disciples want to go to the heavenly planets. That means so much of our consciousness, even though we're in Vaishnava God, is of mediocrity. We think small, we act small, we produce small results. Of course we should have an environment that the demigods should come to associate with Radha Damodar. We should all be able to experience such unusual things happening. Why not? It is possible. Of course we should have an environment. When people come into the environment, they feel like they have went to Vrindavan. They feel that they've come into an environment where they get a spiritual shower. How exciting it will be for all of us to have that. How it can be, even while we're in the material world. Even if most people don't have that, some can have that. It's all based on consciousness. It's not that one has to wait for some kind of unusual miracle to happen to become more serious. Or it's not that one has to wait till other people become more and more serious. No. The Krishna factor is there. And it's the opportunity to. Now we apply what is accessible. Especially how we deal with the field of activities that has been given to us by Krishna. So we'll stop there. Any questions or any comments? Anyone has? Maybe want to think about those four points in your own lives. Point of trying to deal with each person in the spirit that the success of your life depends on how you associate. Dealing with the conflict in the spirit of looking at oneself, at fault if there is conflict with someone else. Having the love that we have for someone we love very much and trying to develop that with everyone. And considering the people I'm with, maybe the people, this is my life, or maybe the people I may be leaving my life with, or I may leave the planet, such association. So therefore, one takes each situation with sincerity and with zeal and enthusiasm. It becomes exciting, another opportunity to serve the Vaishnavas, associate with the Vaishnavas, to hear the Vaishnavas, to glorify Krishna. Yes, a children.
Thank you.
But then I was really, really having a lot of trouble with him because I didn't feel that he was saying that he really loved me. That, for example, I understand the highest love in terms of material sacrifice and compared to the spiritual greatness of prayer to let another child. So how can, for example, a mother love, the love that a mother has for her child is very special. So even though a mother can express love for another child, can express love for her husband, well, how is it that she can uniquely, how can we actually develop that kind of love for one another in a real sense of not just showing concern or care, but in a real sense of that same level of love, just like Krishna has different relationships with Krishna.
Your question answers it also. What is one of the essential ingredients of that mother's love for the child? What is the essential ingredient in anyone's love, deep love, for their beloved? Selflessness. One is not thinking so much of only themselves, but thinking about the care of the beloved. You know, we see our babies here. For the parents, they have such love. It's a protective love. It's a monitoring love. It's a love that involves, you know, commitment and sacrifice. And it's a love that involves so much appreciating when they see something happening good, something wonderful, something beneficial for the one that they love. So it involves selflessness. It involves lack of enviousness. It's like if something wonderful happens to one child, but they're envious. Well, some parents are. But a proper parent will be very happy. Because they have so much experiencing, so much concern about the beloved, it's like they put themselves into the consciousness of the beloved. When something happens wonderful, they feel it. Something happens disturbing, they also feel it. That is what we're instructed to do. The Param Dukha Dukhi. We're supposed to feel the happiness and feel the sadness of others. And when the love is deep, that's a natural thing. Somebody you care for, you see them sad, you probably start crying yourself. Because you're feeling their sadness because you care for them so much. You see them happy and you feel also invigorated because you care. See, this is the mood of the Gopis and the Gopas. It's not that they're just waiting for their turn to serve Krishna or to be with Krishna. It's that there's so much intense love and selflessness that when another gopi is serving, that gopi is also feeling the pleasure because of how much love she has for the gopi who's now had a chance to serve Radharani, to serve Krishna, or the gopa. We're just talking about the Krishna consciousness that we're always reading about. But now how do we do that more? How do we make that happen? It's not that the gopi is thinking, okay, I'm waiting around for my turn. I'm going to enjoy even more if I get my turn. The gopi or gopa is thinking, you know, I should do that better. But when they have the chance, or when someone else is also such a chance. That even that gopis, Radharani, they even join even many times more than Krishna. But this is all based on selflessness, avoid enviousness. Now we take converse of that, selfishness, enviousness, material world, material consciousness, karma.
Well, you mentioned that some devotees, they don't really believe that
they're just wrong. I didn't say it, Prabhupada said. Prabhupada said that most devotees, and of course he was, at that time, there was not a grand disciple. But he said most devotees do not believe, the problem is that most devotees do not believe in Krishna. Isn't that hard to reflect on that? We think Krishna's God, then what would be an anxiety about waking him up, anxiety about seeing him, anxiety about grasping him. We think Krishna's God, and so many things. When we have a problem, will we be in so much fear, we just realize that Krishna's control.
at different degrees of how much we accept that Krishna is really, really good. Anyone else? In fact, me, I'm just a visitor. I get a body to organize it. We expect second chance if someone has died, or imagine they have died, and now they're looking at their life in retrospect. Well, it's a practical consideration. I mean, more and more people are into wills now because there's so many problems, so much cheating, and so much abuse after someone leaves. Just like some people now are a little concerned as they get older, they're concerned if they leave the body, will the devotee be able to take care of their body, or will the families come and want to, you know, take it or whatever. So some devotees may write a will. I leave my body, then I would like my devotional community to be able to do the ceremony, to take care, or if somebody has a house, somebody has, like deities, that may be there. Somebody may want some particular devotee to take care, you know, of their deities. I mean, it's not a hard and fast rule about that. If someone is having some assets and some things, they especially in Kali Yuga would like to see that even after you're gone, that somehow it's used in a devotional way, or that it's used to facilitate, you know, the children, it's used to, you know, for the wife. Because we've all seen in many cases, because we are devotees, often, and I think it happened in your case, that there's an inheritance. And then other brothers and sisters, somebody takes it because, oh, you're a devotee. And you can't use it anyway. Or you just want to give it to Krishna. And so that element is there. It was just context of thinking one, you know, might think of if they had something. Any last question? There's so many devotees. This is why about 2 years ago, during the centennial period, maybe 2.5, and I was sending out a message, an international message to our devotees, that we should keep some contact with parents. Unless they're extremely, you know, inimical, what can we do? But in many cases, they're extremely inimical because we haven't written them, we haven't called them, and all they see is this Krishna stuff has taken my son, taken my daughter away, and I haven't heard from them in 15 years. So all they know is that I don't like it. Whatever it is, I don't like it. And some of our greatest legal problems have been from our own relatives and parents. Some of the greatest attackers have been from our own, you know, family members. And that's unfortunate for them because they make offenses. That's unfortunate for us because if we're trying to save the world, we have no time for our families. That's karma connection. That's the money giving you a body. Even though they may be inimical, but if we are just kind to them, then they still may not, in most cases, they won't understand Krishna consciousness, but at least they won't feel so bothered. Won't be so angry, or they won't be so blasphemous, you know, toward the process. So there's a need for us to, you know, write them sometimes, call them, send them pictures, especially when you have children, send them pictures of the children. You know, they like that. Send the grandmothers, the grandfathers. Because we owe them. Shastri says, well, no, it's devotee, you know, it's different. But when you take birth, you owe the people who have given you the body. It's not an accident. And by that way, in some cases, devotees now, because a lot of devotees are middle age, they're at an age where their mothers and fathers are leaving the bodies. As they leave, then they can benefit by what they give you. By giving you something, you're a devotee, they're going to make some spiritual advancement because they've given you something that you're going to use in devotional service. But if you haven't been in contact with them for years and years, you know, why should they arrange anything? Not just a matter of getting something, but it's a matter of helping them. So then you revitalize the relationship. And so they got, you know, an estate, they got a house or something, and they get a couple too. Please.
then we would become just like so-and-so, like so-and-so. And just describing the marathon, that he had all the mannerisms, you know, all the original different qualities, because he didn't try to get what he knows, he didn't go thoroughly. But it would be just like that person. And so that's kind of like what
that's your
point that you were saying.
I remember that when I explained this particular point. Because then as we relate to everyone in that way, then that comes back out to us. We experience the Krishna presence in all things. So now, I don't know whether I'm still guilty, 10:30, I guess we'll see. I think most of the devotees retreat will be leaving on 10:30, 11. That means the United States will have to take all the feast for ourselves. So everyone get ready to take the 2-plate feast. Or 2.5. Okay, we'll see. Maybe not so quick. The boys who are visiting, who's leaving us at 10:30 or 11 today? Rachel. Most of you will be here. Okay, well, I'll come on seat then. I'll come at 10:30. And after prasadam, and I'll speak a little brief and take questions. Okay. So some, if you have some more questions, just hold it today, and we'll deal with it. Just. It's gone found the child in the vine with A.G. Bhakti Vedanta Swami said, Babu Bhakti, Dinsi Bhara Damodaji Ki.
Swami Bhakti, Swami Ki.
The books are available now or during the 10:30 class, or they're also in the store.